It's February 1st, 2017, Masoret, continuing the story of the Akedah. The Torah gives us an insight into the mentality of Avraham. It's very important. It's not just a matter, as we said, that he was willing to go through with the test, but we also need to know about his mental attitude towards the entire thing. And the way we explained it, it was sort of unexpected. And a transformation, that is, the desire to serve God, overcame all the negative emotions that would be there, all the resistance, and everything was converted into a desire to serve God. That's why he didn't want to just walk away. And that's why the Malach had to restrain him, not just from offering Yitzchak as a sacrifice, but from any activity, any kind of a blemish. He wanted, as we said, to carry out. That's very, very important. That's a very important lesson in general. I think we can learn something from here. And we don't pay enough attention to it. And that is that it's not enough to just have certain thoughts. Very often we have a thought, we have, you know, we're inspired. People walk away from hearing, you know, Dvar Torah, whatever it may be. Or it doesn't have to be a Dvar Torah, some other type of a presentation. That's a very big word. I found it inspiring. But then the question is, so what? What does it lead to? I mean, I know a lot of people like that. You know, people have their favorite classes or rabbis or whatever. Generally speaking, they have someone who's inspiring. And I'm not knocking it in any way. That's not what I mean. But I wonder, what's the result of that? You get your dose of inspiration. But what does it lead to? Does it lead to any change? Does it lead to any improvement of any kind? And, I mean, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Because I've always emphasized that inspiration is not enough. That's a good title. Inspiration is not enough. Because, like we said, it wears off. It has to produce something. So, I think that idea is expressed over here. That he wanted to do an action. Why did he have to do the action? He had reached the level that he was supposed to reach. That is what the Ramban set out in explaining what the whole test was about, that he had this potential. According to him, the whole purpose of the test was to take something which existed in potential and to bring it to the level of action. So we could ask, at what point in time did that happen? That Avraham achieved that. So, did it happen as soon as he tied Yitzchak to the Akedah and picked up the knife and was about to bring it down and then stopped when the Malach intervened? Or didn't end at that point, but it continued and it ended when he brought the isle. When he brought the ram. So, that's what I'm suggesting. That the bringing of the ram is an important aspect of the story. And it's incomplete without that. Because, I mean, I'm not going to say that this is, I'm not comparing this to being to inspiration. This is much, much more. He did what he had to do. He followed the tzivu, he followed the command. But I think it illustrates that idea that up until this point, he hadn't really acted it out. So there was one higher notch that he could go to, and that would be to act it out, bepoal, actively, consciously, doing what we called yesterday a substitute action. And I would say that you do see that substitute actions have significance. even though they're not identical. Sometimes you, obviously you always aim for the best action, the most accurate. Sometimes you can't achieve that. The question is then, does a substitute action? It's interesting, you have a case in the Gemara. I'm not going to go looking it up now to get the exacts. A certain situation where they didn't have a esrog. And they decreed to use something, I don't remember what fruit, some other type of fruit in the place of the esrog. Shelo tishtakach, that it shouldn't be forgotten. Now, I don't remember what the fruit was, but they're not yotzei the mitzvah, that's for sure. It's not like the Chacham came along and said, this now has the status of an esrog. And you're fulfilling the mitzvah of lulav with this. But it's a substitute. Now, a substitute can't help you in terms of the mitzvah. The mitzvahs are very, very exact, very defined. So if a person doesn't have a sukkah, he has some kind of a shed outside, some type of a tent, which to all intents and purposes, it's very, very interesting, to all intents and purposes, if you're just looking at the tom of the mitzvah, the idea behind the mitzvah, I mean, that's a separate question. We're not going to go through that now. A person could raise that question. A tent would not qualify as a sukkah. We all know that. Because a sukkah has certain specific requirements and so on. But if you're just looking at the purpose, I mean, that's basically the root of non-Orthodox, like Reform thinking. Reform Judaism, conservative Judaism, which is pretty much the same thing, is basically, that's their approach, and it's not unreasonable. It has to be answered. It's not unreasonable. It's that we'll take a look at the mitzvah. Let's take a look at the purpose of the mitzvah. I don't think they would object, by the way. I mean, there's certain mitzvahs where they don't see the point altogether, or they think it's outmoded. But something like sukkah, I think that even in the Reform, they observe it. Because I remember years and years and years ago, I used to teach, Talmud Torahs in conservative or Reform. I remember around sukkah time, they'd always put up a sukkah. Because the idea is appealing. It commemorates. They love anything which commemorates some historical event. So it commemorates, and there's no objection. There's no objection to it. I mean, they like Pesach because of the Exodus, and the trek in the wilderness, they like that. So it commemorates that. Shavuos is revelation, so I don't know how they deal with that. But Sukkot is something which is appealing. So you could have the same thing. That is to say, the main idea is to reenact what our forefathers went through in the wilderness. That they were not, they gave up, they renounced the comfort, two things, the comfort and the protection of the house. And put themselves completely under the protection of God. I mean, there's a bigger idea in terms of the leaving of the house, one's personal comforts. So you could achieve the same thing with a tent. Yet the halacha adds a whole new dimension, which is, very, very unique, and it's unexpected. No, it's got to be built a certain way. We're very, very specific. And if it doesn't conform to those measurements, so it's not a kosher sukkah. If you use schach, and this schach, it turns out, for one reason or another, was a puzzle. So then you didn't fulfill the mitzvah sukkah. Even though you went out there, and you had all of the ideas and the thoughts and the reenactments. So in other words, even though you conform to the reason of the mitzvah, which is a very interesting phenomenon. Even though you fulfilled every aspect of the reason of the mitzvah, but if you didn't perform it according to the halachic requirements, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah. That's a very interesting thing. But nevertheless, I'm just trying to point out that from the case of the lulav, you have this in all cases, but there are certain cases where they were concerned that they would just forget, and therefore they said you should take a different fruit. The point being that the action that is done with regard to a substitute does have validity. Of course, it has to be further. That doesn't mean in every single case and every single substitute. But apparently that's what we encountered yesterday. That Avraham wanted to go through the action. He wanted to go through the action, but he couldn't. So he settled upon a substitute. And that was his kavana. As according to Rashi, that was his intention. As he was doing it, he expressed that idea to Hashem, that this should be worthy before you, as if I was now putting the knife to my son, as if every avoda. He didn't run away from it. He didn't repress that thought, as most people would, and move on. Okay, then we said that he named the place. We said that the action that he did there was responsible for the Hashra Shechina, the association of the Divine Presence. That place became special for all future generations. That would be the place where, so to speak, God would be seen, because that would be the place of the Hashkacha, and man would attain atonement. That man would attain atonement by reflecting upon the significance of what took place at the Akedah. Okay, so now we're ready to proceed. Now, Vayikra Malach Hashem, we're in Pasuk Tezvav, that's 15, that the Malach Hashem called out to Avraham, Shenis min Hashemayim. Second time. Now the word Shenis is easier to see. Yesterday, when I skipped the previous Pasuk. So, the question was, what do you mean Shenis? Of course it's Shenis. I mean, because he called out before, so he's calling out now. So, well, it's not always a Shenis, because it could be a continuation. But clearly, this is a second. This is a distinct communication. And it has to do with the fact that everything that transpired between the first communication, what Abraham did, and now it's Shenis. So we can understand, because this is in light of what took place after the first call of the Malach. So let's see what it is. Vayomer, and he said, Binishbati Na'um Hashem. Interesting expression. It's interesting, because when God Yod al kes ka, you have the same thing by Amalek, because when God takes an oath, kavyachol, in other words, God doesn't take an oath, it's a descriptive terminology. But it means to say it's an absolute commitment, so to speak. It's as though God takes an oath. But binishbati, God swears by himself, by his existence. We swear by Hashem, as God exists. And thus, if we're going to attribute an oath, which we have permission to do so, if we're going to attribute an oath to Hashem, then who does God swear by? By himself. So I guess that would be the way to translate it. I swear by myself. Nu'um Hashem, okay, says Hashem, Kiyan asher asisa sadavar hazeh, because you did this thing, v'lo chasachta es pincha es yechidecha, and you did not spare your son, your only son. All right, so let's understand that before we go any further. What's he saying? He's saying, let's continue. Because you did this, because you did not withhold from me your son, your only son, which is pretty much the crux of the entire test, that which is most treasured to you in this world, which a person, and the way I've been explaining it, that it's not just that that's the thing that the person wants the most, but that's basically the whole foundation of his religion. The foundation of a person's religion has to do with the things that he cherishes the most in this world. And that's how I've been explaining that dimension of the Akedah. It means it's a totally different basis for the relationship to Hashem, which is completely removed from the things that a person most cares for in this world. So he's saying, Ki varech avarechecha, I will bless you. Bless, I will bless you. Whenever the Torah repeats something, it adds significance. Baharba arbe ezarecha, and I will greatly increase your seed, your offspring, kechokvei hashamayim, like the stars of the heaven, v'kachol asher al shfas hayam, and like the sand that is upon the seashore, v'yirash zaracha, and your offspring will inherit eishar oivav, the gates of their enemies. Well, let's do the next blessing, because apparently the blessings that will ensue as a result of what you did are conveyed in two psukim. Vizbarchu bezarecha, and through your offsprings will be blessed. They will, kol goyei haaretz, all nations of the world will bless themselves. It's not clear what that means. Will bless themselves by your offspring. I mean, they'll be blessed, or they'll bless themselves. We'll try to clarify that. Ekev, as there, because, or as Ekev, literally, in the heels of. But the simple sense is because. Asher shamata bakoli, because you listen to my voice. That's the end of the, that's pretty much the end. There's one more pasuk of Vayoshev Avraham, but that's pretty much the end of the Akedah story. So let's take pasuk Yud Zayin, the rewards that God will bless you and greatly increase your offspring. It's interesting that it doesn't just say that will greatly increase your offspring, but what do you need the kochvei hashamayim? Like the stars of the heaven. I think we get the idea that God will greatly increase his offspring. I don't know how much we need the kochvei hashamayim. And once we have that, kachol asher asfas hayam. This is used, this has been used before. It'll be, that is, the comparisons. That the God made promises to Abraham. Because one time he told, that was all prior to the fact, prior to the miraculous birth of Yitzhak, so that was a huge concern of Avraham, that he didn't have an offspring. And you could see how, you know, how vital a matter that was, and how it was such a huge question. It's kind of, if you'll forgive me for saying this, I don't mean it in the wrong way, it's kind of like the elephant in the room. In the relationship between God and Abraham, because all the talk pertains to the future and offspring and so forth, and he doesn't have a child. So, I mean, there are occasions when Abraham says, Hashem Elokim atitan li, v'anochi holech hariri. There are times when he expresses it openly, that he doesn't get it. Like, what are you going to give me? What's all these things about? We're talking here about a tremendous future, you know, with offspring, and I don't even have a child. How's that going to work? So God tells him to go outside and look at the stars and see if you can count them. Ko yezaracha, thus shall be your children. Vehem in Bashem, and he believed. So you see that he had to operate. Abraham had to operate for a very, very long time on the principle of Amunah. Maybe that should become clearer to us. Because that means to say that if you take a look at the actuality of the situation, there's nothing in the situation that would give you any encouragement. How's that going to happen? That's the plight. Now, we have to learn from Avram, and we all fall into those kinds of situations from time to time, where we need to rely on Amunah, but there's different levels, because, you know, sometimes we could see the possibilities are there. Now you're building an institution, you have infrastructure, so on, so, but you still have things that you need. So you have to have Amunah, but it's not the same degree of Amunah. But in the case of Avraham, it was totally Amunah, because if you took a look at, he's an old man, and Sarah is old, and they don't have any children. So what are you talking about? How will imagine an elderly couple today? They're really, really elderly, and they don't have any children. And they are, Hashem is saying, you're going to be the progenitors of a great nation. So it's going to sound crazy. How's it possible? It goes contrary to everything. So at certain times, the children are referred to as the stars of the heaven, and at other times, it's like the dust of the earth. Here, both are brought together. Okay. And then it mentions something else, that v'yirar zaracha eishar oivav, and your children will inherit the gate of their enemy. What is that supposed to mean? What is that a reference to? At least in the first case, we get a general idea that there'll be a multitude, there'll be many. But the idea of inheriting the gate of their enemy, we don't even know what it's talking about. Anyways, let's take a look at the Mefarshim. Okay. Ramban Anyan Asher Asiso Asadavar Hazeh. So he says, Gam Etchila Hefticho. Also from the beginning, he promised him, Ki Yarbe Ezaro Kechokve Hashemayim Uchafar Aretz. As the Ramban asked the question, I mean, we just talked it out, that this is, God had already blessed him or promised him that he would, that's when he says, go outside and take a look at the stars. Ko ye yezaracha, thus shall be your children. And then he also told him, using the metaphor of the dust of the earth. So the Ramban is asking a good question. All that was promised to Abraham prior to the Akedah. Didn't seem to be contingent upon the Akedah. So you'd expect, if this is something new, and it's a new dimension, now, if he's going to be rewarded, whether or not a reward must ensue is another question. Because the way we're understanding it, according to the Ramban, if the purpose is to elevate him to a higher level. So I don't know. If a person's on a higher level, of course the benefits ensue, but that's because he's on a higher level of perfection. Here it seems that there's practical rewards as well. So then he has a very good question. That what we're looking at seems to be a repetition of what he already had earned. He had that already in the bank. So what's God adding to it? That's the question. All right, so Jesse is suggesting that it really isn't something new. It's just that when Avram accepted, which he had to do, he had to accept the reality. Which is another thing we haven't really taken up. Rashi mentions it. That in addition to the general problem that of fulfilling this deed, I mean, he basically had contradictory messages, because one day you say that Kibi Yitzchak Yikar L'Chazara, that didn't happen too long ago when he sent away Yishmael. It was because through Yitzchak, your name will be perpetuated. Your descendants will be known through Yitzchak. And that was so significant that it warranted divorce of Hagar and Yishmael. So that's real. And now you're telling me to kill him. I mean, that's contradictory. But whatever, we're not going to take that up right now. But certainly, in accepting it, Avram accepted the fact that that's not going to happen. Well, whatever. God said that, but now God's will is different. So Jesse's saying, so now that, however, that he discovers that it was a test, so God is sort of reinstating. It's not like that's over and there's a new plan, but the plan continues. I never meant to remove the plan. Well, it would follow logically. God is saying, I never meant to remove the plan because it was never intended. I knew that you were not going to go through with this because I was not going to let you. So now he's simply reiterating that everything else is still in place. So we're going to take, however, a look at the Ramban. Ramban says, Yana Sherasisa, because you did Hamaisa Hagadol Hazeh, because you did this great deed, Shenishpa Bishmo Hagadol, that God swore in his great name, that's God's war. Visheyirash Zaro Eis Ashar Oivav. And that, I'm sorry, I skipped something in the Ramban. Just a few words. Because he says that, he starts off by saying that at the outset he already promised these things. But he says, Avalata Hosiflo. But now he added. That God added something. Yana Sherasisa Hamaisa Hagodol Hazeh, because you did this great action, Shenishpa Bishmo Hagodol, that he swore in his great name, Vishayirash Zaro Eis Shar Oivav, and that his children would inherit the gate of their enemies. Well, I'm not sure what does that mean. Shenishpa Bishmo Hagadol. The fact that God, in other words, according to the Ramban, the Binishpati, Noam Hashem, is something new, which I don't get. What does that mean? That now it was a shvua, it was an oath, and before it wasn't an oath. Well, if that's new, we don't understand what's special about it. Now, I'm seeing the Evan Ezra who says, Binishpati, Zuhi Hashvua Hagdola, Ha'omedas La'ad. This is the great oath which endures forever. Okay, so it does mean something. Apparently, until now, it wasn't a Shvua. And I guess there's a difference between a Haftacha and a Shvua. Haftacha is a promise. And a Shvua apparently takes it to a different level. Plus, we have to explain. What do you mean? If God promises, isn't that enough? Certainly would be enough for me or for you. If God swears, we wouldn't know the difference. It's pretty much the same thing because God keeps his word. But the Ebenezer really gave us a clue because he says, the fact that it becomes a Shvua means it's going to endure eternally. The implication being that prior to this, it's not necessarily going to endure because apparently a promise implies that there are certain conditions attached. That is, if you do such and such, if you act in a certain way, so then this is what you could be assured of. But if you don't, then it's not going to happen. So it's not an absolute guarantee. It is a guarantee, provided you play your role. But if you deviate, then you can lose it all. On the basis of a promise, you still are very, very vulnerable, because you could lose it all. But the Shvua takes it a step beyond that. Now it's going to be eternal, irrespective That, I believe, is what the Ibn Ezra is saying. And the Ramban merely says that he shenishba b'shma gadol. He swore in his great name. I guess he assumes that we understand. That itself brings it to a certain level. Let's continue now with the Ramban. V'sheyirash zaro eishar oivav. And that his children would inherit the gate of their enemies. V'hine huftach, says the Ramban, and behold, he promised, shlo yigrom shum chet, sheyichal zaro. That no chet would cause the destruction of his children. O sheyipol biyad oivav v'lo yakom, the children would fall into the hands of an enemy v'lo yakom and not arise. That is, they would fall into the hands of their enemy, but it would never be a situation where they would be terminated, that they would not emerge, V'hine zu haftacha shlema, and behold, this is a complete or a perfect haftacha, b'ge'ulaha asidalanu, in the ultimate geula. That is very, very fascinating, that this Ramban, because here we see the origin of the belief in Mashiach, basically, the ultimate. He's not mentioning Mashiach because that's not the essence over here. The essence is the redemption. As a result of this action, God then takes a shvua, and the shvua, according to the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban, is that the Jews will be an eternal people. They will never be consumed by any nation which will overpower them temporarily. They will emerge. They will emerge from any type of an enslavement, which we see. I mean, now we're a few thousand years later. See, that's one of the benefits of the Torah. The Torah makes predictions. The Torah makes predictions about the future. As I said, no other religion does that. I mean, the kind of predictions that are amenable to being checked out. That's something unique about the Torah. And you see more of that, of course, in the Devarim. And in the Tochacha, mainly in the Tochacha. And the dispersion, the persecution, as I've tried to show in the case of the Tochacha, how you relate that to the experience in Europe, especially the Holocaust. And here, however, it's being expressed in brief, because here we're talking about Avraham. And it's essentially saying that we've reached a new level, which until now we didn't have. Because until now, it was basically a haftacha. And a haftacha can change, because it's, as I said, the haftacha is not an absolute guarantee. It's like, you know, you promise your kids you're going to take them to the amusement park, whatever it is. But of course, it's understood that they behave a certain way. It's not like you can't rescind it. Ishfu would be where it's absolute. It's not contingent on their, you can't take it away from them because they didn't behave properly. I guess that would be, sometimes it's like a reward for something they did, and then it's absolute. Even if they don't behave well, you have to do it for them because they've earned it. And that's what I would say over here. Not that he didn't earn the haftachas before, but this was something special. And with this, I guess you could say that he acquired eternity. And that's interesting. See, that expression, I wouldn't know what it's talking about. That your children will inherit the gate of their enemies. What does that mean? That expression is found in Chayesara. Interestingly enough, when Rivka's family takes their leave of her, lets her go off with Eliezer to marry Yitzchak, so they bless her. And it says that they blessed Rivka and they said to her, our sister, you will be thousands of myriads. In other words, whatever, how many, your descendants. Your descendants will be like tremendously numerous. And your offspring will inherit the gates of their enemies, which is the exact same thing that Hashem is telling Avraham now. So the Rashbam comments, Atayili alfei revava v'yirar zarech, mimeich yetzu osam habanim, from you shall those banim, those sons, go forth, they'll come out from you, shenemar behem b'shas akeda, concerning whom it was said at the time of the akeda, v'yirar zarecha ishar oivav. That's what, he says, Zeh Peirush Rabbi Yossi Bar Shimon Kara. That's his Peirush. Now, if you take a look at the... take a look at the Sforno, he has a very interesting twist. Atayi. On the words, Atayi, you will be. So he says, Hayi, it was a brachata, Hayi nocho, Labalech, Bedarche Tuvech. Then you should, it's an insight, by the way. I think we're not taking up that subject now. We've taken it up before. It might be an insight into the special relationship between Rivka and Yitzchak, the manner in which she acted towards Yitzchak. According to the Sforno, they were giving her advice that she should, you know, act with him in a certain manner of ease and calmness. Be'ofan sha'at bilvad v'lo isha acheras, so that you alone and not another woman or another wife, tiyi li alfei revava v'yirar zarech. In other words, it should all come from you. And then he says, k'mo shenishba hakel yisbarach l'zarech shel Avraham. Just like. So both of them, it's interesting, they're learning that over here was referenced that they were referencing the bracha that Hashem made to Avram that we just took up. You keep going, you take a look at Rashi. It seems like there's unanimity over here. Because Rashi says, Atayili alfei revava, at v'zarech tekablu osa bracha. You and your offspring will receive that bracha, shenemar li Avram bahar hamoria, harbo arbe zarech, azarecha. Here it's Zarech, because it's feminine. There it's Zarecha. Yehi ratzon sheyehei oso hazera mimech. Pretty similar to the Sforno. It was like a bakasha. It was a request. The blessing was a request. May it be his will that should be fulfilled for you. V'lo me'isha acheres, and not from another woman. I mean, the implication clearly is that her family, especially the main person being Lavan, was aware of this. Was aware of this blessing. Because it doesn't sound like it's a midrashic type of a thing. It seems to be like the plain shot. According to the Rashbam, according to the Sforno, according to Rashi. I mean, certainly we could look up other... It makes sense. It makes sense because the blessing was given to Avraham. And the way Rashi learns, the repetition of the word is to include Yitzchak. And clearly, it has to come about through his descendants, through Yitzchak. So they were blessing her that it should come about through her. Clearly, not that she was going to have. She had two sons, and one of them was disqualified, but she had Yaakov. And it came about through Yaakov. So in that respect, their bracha was fulfilled. Just find it strange that they would be the ones to offer such a blessing. But it makes sense because they're using the exact words that are used over here.